Never go to the second location. Always trust your gut.
Hello, my name is Chrissy Champagne, and you are listening to Residue, a true crime podcast dedicated to keeping you paranoid. Today on Residue, we will be talking about the truth behind the Lifetime movie Kidnapped, the Hannah Anderson story. And before we get started, you know that you can follow me on Instagram at Residue Podcast, TikTok at Residue, a true crime podcast, and Facebook at Residue, a true crime podcast. And like I always say, the greatest thing you could possibly do is leave a positive review. And that's for any podcast that you love. Okay, I have to read you a review that I saw this week. It's from Dee. And hello, Dee. How are you? I love this review. Thank you so much for being here. It says, Residued Forever, 5 stars. Absolutely love this podcast. I came across Residue via TikTok. Chrissy Champagne is an amazing storyteller. I love her personality. She is also very respectful of the victims. 10 out of 10 recommend. I look forward to this podcast every week. Officially a Residued Forever. Thank you, Dee. I give you 5 stars. Thank you to everybody who's been leaving the most amazing reviews. You're blowing my mind, and I'm so happy you are all here. And before we get started, I just have to warn you, listener discretion is advised. Kidnapped, the Hannah Anderson story, is a made-for-TV Lifetime movie that premiered in 2015, directed by Peter Sullivan, starring Jessica Amley as Hannah and Scott Patterson of Gilmore Girls fame as Jim DiMaggio. Another one of those films that made-for-television films that takes a television character that we all love and puts him in this evil, horrid role. Luke is not the nicest guy in this movie. As a side note here, last year was the first time that I ever watched Gilmore Girls. I might have already said that on the podcast, but I watched it straight through season one all the way to the end, and I was obsessed. Oh my God, they talk about Madonna a lot on that show. You guys know how much I love Madonna. This movie is based on the real-life events of the kidnapping of Hannah Anderson, and this happened in 2013. So I'm going to tell you just right off the bat here, Hannah does not like this movie. Hannah does not like that this movie was made, and she is pretty upset about it. According to a 10news.com article, Hannah said that this is a, quote, lie of a movie. Hannah posted on her Instagram that she never gave them any form of permission to make this movie or even information to put in this movie. Even the preview alone has false facts and untrue events. So, you know, Kidnapped, the Hannah Anderson story, it is a dramatized retelling of this traumatic event that actually happened to Hannah. But while it follows this general outline of the case, it adds ambiguity and it adds speculation, especially about Hannah's role. And I did find that a little confusing watching this Lifetime movie because I watched a docuseries called FBI True, and this is told from the perspective of an FBI agent that was on the case. And I also watched a show called Hashtag Text Me When You Get Home. And in this show, Hannah is interviewed, her father Brett is interviewed, and her best friend Marissa is on this show. So if you would like the links to those two shows, I have them in my show notes because those shows will give you a better representation of what Hannah went through. It almost gives you the feeling that they're saying that Hannah had or possibly had a deeper connection to DiMaggio. And this was something that was happening to Hannah at the time. There was so much public speculation and rumors. I mean, this girl is only 16 years old. She's trying to heal. Hannah was a victim in every sense of the word. August 2013, Chuck Davis is an FBI agent with the hostage rescue team. Now he is enjoying his day, hanging out with his family. His sister is visiting. She's in town. She lives all the way in Germany. So he is visiting with his family when he gets the call. Chuck Davis already knew about this case. He heard about it all week. The case of Hannah Anderson, an Amber Alert had gone out a week prior because Hannah Anderson was kidnapped by a family friend, 40-year-old James DiMaggio. Hannah was only 16 years old. So Chuck knows. He knows all about this case, but this case started off as an arson investigation turned kidnapping case. 1 week prior, on August 4th, 2013, a fire was reported at Jim DiMaggio's house in Boulevard, California. When responders arrived to the home of James DiMaggio, they found the body of 44-year-old Christina Anderson in the garage, and from first glance, they knew right away that foul play was involved. Christina, who goes by Tina, was murdered. She had a tarp over her. They pulled the tarp back. Her ankles were bound. Her mouth was covered with duct tape. Tina was bashed in the head at least 12 times. Tina's ankles were bound by a plastic cable tie and duct tape was wrapped around her mouth and neck. Her autopsy report said that her right arm and both legs were fractured and there was a cut on her neck. Her body was found in the garage of this burning home. And this is a very big trigger warning for everyone concerning death of an animal. If you want to just skip ahead about 30 seconds. Alongside Tina's body, the family dog was found, shot, and killed, and burned beyond recognition. Tina Anderson was married with two children, and her children were nowhere in sight at this time. And Tina was from National City, California, which was about an hour away from this home in Boulevard, California. And police start to learn that Tina was really great friends with the homeowner, Jim DiMaggio. In fact, Jim was a very close family friend who was sort of watching over Tina and her two children, 16-year-old Hannah and 8-year-old Ethan, while their father, Brett, was away for a 3-month working trip in Tennessee. Investigators believe that the person that set this house on fire was using a timer, and they start to believe that it was the homeowner, James DiMaggio. He was the one who set these timers up to burn down his house, but where were the children? If Tina was here, where were the kids? So they put out an Amber Alert. At this point, investigators believe that Jim could have kidnapped 16-year-old Hannah and 8-year-old Ethan, but upon further examination of the crime scene in an upstairs room at Jim's house, they do find the body of 8-year-old Ethan. And this is just so disturbing, but Ethan is unrecognizable, and they don't know if this could be a different child, and they don't know what Jim's been up to, so they're covering all of their bases. They do get the DNA from Brett Anderson, Hannah and Ethan's father, and it is a match for the body that they did find upstairs in the home. Now, Ethan was believed to have died because of the fire, and Ethan's autopsy report also concluded that he did have skeletal fractures. Investigators are talking to neighbors, to friends, and they start learning a little bit more about Jim DiMaggio, and they discover that he is a very close family friend, and he met Hannah's father, Brett, way back, I believe in 1986, when they were both working the same job. They became really close friends. And Brett Anderson says that he was himself the worker bee of the family. So he's out working this job in telecom. He meets Jim DiMaggio and they hit it off immediately. He says that Jim was funny, happy. He became a part of the family just instantly. Now, Brett says that Jim always wanted a family of his own and he always wanted children, but he never did. So he just became a part of their family. And the Andersons were his surrogate family. Investigators are getting more information on Jim and the type of relationship that he had with the family. They're talking to neighbors, to loved ones. They do speak to Hannah's best friend. Now, her name is Marissa, and She is adorable the way she talks about her best friend. She says that she just loved Hannah from the moment she met her because the two were exactly alike. They were both fun, they were talkative, loud, and she jokingly says they both liked being the center of attention. She says Hannah was always happy and smiling, and they would just hang out constantly. And Hannah's father adds to that Hannah was just your typical teen girl. She loved to dance, cheerleading. She was very athletic. She was the type of girl that was always on the phone with her friends, and she just loved being with her friends. So as police are speaking with Marissa, they learn that Hannah was actually supposed to be with her friends that night that she went missing, because Marissa and Hannah had plans, and they hadn't seen each other for about a week. So their plan was, we're just going to hang out together, have a girly night, a sleepover, we're going to dance, we're going to sing, you know how the typical girl night goes. So Marissa was stoked for this night, and that night arrives and she doesn't hear from Hannah. She just figures that her friend just blew her off, and she's a little upset about it, but she's like, I don't understand why she's not answering me. But unbeknownst to Marissa, Hannah had to go to Jim's house that night. So she did tell Marissa, you know, there's this party coming up at Uncle Jim's house. We're going to say goodbye to his house. It's sort of like a going away party for his house. And this was strange to Marissa because Uncle Jim's house was the hangout house. She didn't realize that Hannah had to go to this going away party that night. I mean, because the two of them had plans. So she's completely confused, and she's trying to figure out why Hannah's not answering her back, when all of a sudden she gets a text from her friends saying, oh my God, turn on the news. Uncle Jim's house is on fire. And this is when everything changes for Marissa. She's completely, can you even imagine? Like, she's not hearing back from her friend. She probably thinks she's in that burning house. And now Marissa is learning through the news that Hannah's mother and Hannah's 8-year-old brother were also inside of that house. And she was so close to this family. When you're best friends with someone like that, you get so close to their family members. Marissa adored Ethan. 8-year-old Ethan was fearless and hilarious and a gem, according to his father, Brett. There was no one like Ethan. And even Marissa says that Ethan was the most hilarious kid she ever met in her life. So she is now learning that Ethan and Tina, who is basically her second mother, Tina was just this amazing person, an amazing friend, and she was the kind of mom that always gave advice to all of Hannah and Ethan's friends. She was everyone in the neighborhood's second mom. And now Marissa realizes that she has lost these two lovely people in her life, and she has absolutely no idea where her best friend is. Nobody does. And Marissa keeps texting Hannah. I feel like we all would do that. Just text. Like, it's almost like you're keeping a line open between you and your best friend. And Marissa even says herself, she didn't want to believe it. So she was like, come on, Hannah, stop. Stop joking around. Please come home. Where are you? And she's sending her text saying, I love you. I miss you. Investigators figure out why the family was at Jim's house that day. So Jim told Tina that his house was going into foreclosure and that he had to move, and he wanted to have one last big party at his home before he had to give it all away. Now, he had this really wonderful cabin, and Marissa tells police that the kids used to hang out at his house all the time. He was Uncle Jim. He just let all the teens come over. But I got to tell you something. He said they couldn't bring over any boys they had crushes on. He just didn't want to deal with that. He also had another rule. They weren't allowed to go upstairs. And Marissa tells police that even if they were kind of kidding around, starting to walk towards the upstairs, he would yell at them. And it would be a little scary. And he would be like, do not ever come up here. Now, Hannah and her BFF Marissa would hang out at Uncle Jim's house a lot. It was a really big property, and Marissa actually says on the docuseries hashtag text me when you get home that Uncle Jim was just like a kid in an adult's body. And he would hang out with the girls, give them rides back and forth to places they needed to be. He would let them have parties at his house. And he would also let them drink and smoke. And Marissa says he just seemed very trustworthy and caring. So they learn that Hannah's dad, Brett, he lost his job. And he does get this job offer, but it's for an opportunity in Tennessee. And he doesn't think he should take it, but the family is really in need of money. And Jim starts talking his best friend, Brett, into taking this job. It's going to be a 3-month job where he will be away from his family. But Jim is like, listen, Brett, I got you. I'm going to take care of your family for you. I'm going to do everything they need. I'll give them rides wherever they need to go. I'll come over and check on Tina every now and then. I mean, Jim was at their house constantly. And this is Brett's best buddy. Of course, he's going to say, okay, you got my back. You're going to help me out while I go, you know, make this opportunity work for my family. Thank you so much. And now it's August 4th, 2013, and Jim has invited the entire family over to his home for one last going away party. And now his house has gone up in flames. The bodies of 44-year-old Tina and 8-year-old Ethan Anderson are found inside of the home with their family dog, and the entire country is on the search for 16-year-old Hannah Anderson. Marissa and all of Hannah's friends, they're plastering posters and pictures of Hannah all over town. They're going on their social media pages. They're blasting pictures of Hannah everywhere, like, please help us. Anything you can do to help. And Marissa says that the entire community just came together. And, you know, detectives are pretty scared about this one because they start learning from Hannah's friends that Jim was acting kind of creepy just a couple of days before Hannah went missing, before these two murders occurred. They say that Jim was telling Hannah that if they were the same age, that he thinks that they would be together, that he has kind of a little crush on her. Can you imagine how creeped out Hannah had to be with this 40-year-old man who's supposed to be basically like her uncle, a family member to her, is telling her he had a crush on her? Marissa explains that Jim picked them up from one of their after-school activities. They're in the car, they're listening to the radio, and they hear some kind of love song, like a Bruno Mars love song. And they're in the back seat, two young teenage girls talking about how they wish they could fall in love. They wish they could meet someone that would write them a beautiful song like this. And that's when Jim says, you know, if we were the same age, I think that we would be together. And Marissa says that Hannah just got really quiet. Like, you could tell she was creeped out. This was a little weird for this grown-ass man to be saying this to her. And he goes, no, I mean, I love you in a family way, not in a creepy way. This is a creepy way, my guy. Very creepy way. So after this conversation, Hannah and Marissa start distancing themselves from Jim because they're scared. Why is he talking like this? So they just slowly start, you know, not hanging out with him anymore. And then Jim sends Hannah this long-ass Facebook message telling her that he loves her and he missed her. Well, this is starting to freak the investigators out. They know what they're up against now. They're starting to put things together. They also start searching through the house. And inside of the garage, there was an attic. And inside of that attic, there were just tons of black garbage bags filled with boxes and garbage. And all of these boxes were of, like, camping equipment. It looked like he went on a shopping spree, bought a tent, bought some camping equipment, bought some handcuffs. Yep. And all of that stuff was thrown in these bags and put up inside of this attic. Jim DiMaggio, the 40-year-old telecommunications technician from San Diego, California, he is a trusted family friend of the Andersons. He had this outwardly friendly demeanor, but he was exhibiting troubling behavior, especially towards 16-year-old Hannah Anderson. He's making these inappropriate comments. He's suggesting romantic interest in her. He's causing her and her friends discomfort. Well, let me tell you a little something about Jim DiMaggio's personal history that revealed some disturbing events. Now, his father had been accused of attempting to abduct a teenage girl. Now, this is according to one of Jim DiMaggio's friends. James Lee Sr., James DiMaggio's father, was accused of attempting to kidnap a 16-year-old daughter of an ex-girlfriend at gunpoint in 1988, and his father committed suicide on August 10th, 1995. This was exactly 18 years to the day before his own son now, Jim DiMaggio, committed almost exactly the same crime. Another strange event that police uncover is that Jim actually made financial arrangements that would benefit the Anderson children. So to officers, this indicated a possible obsessive attachment. In 2011, Jim lived with Hannah's grandmother, Bernice Anderson, and he listed Bernice as the beneficiary to his life insurance policy. And I guess that Jim's family was a little confused as to why Jim was leaving all of his money, I believe it was about $112,000, to the grandmother of Hannah and Ethan. And he said he didn't trust Hannah and Ethan's parents, I mean, Brett, who's his best friend, and Tina. I mean, Jim says he's the closest family friend ever to this family, but he's now saying he didn't trust Brett and Tina to handle the money, so he wanted to leave it with their grandmother. Now, this whole situation prompted members of Jim's family to request a paternity test to determine if he was actually the father of the Anderson children. I mean, this pissed Brett off. This is his family. And he didn't even meet Jim until his wife, Tina, was 6 months pregnant with Hannah already. So what are these people talking about? Brett actually called this whole suggestion that Jim could possibly have fathered Hannah and Ethan just absolutely disgusting. So here's the thing, though. Jim is a close family friend. He didn't have children of his own. Maybe at this point in 2011, he just figured, if I do go at this time, I'll just leave all my money to my surrogate family. Now, that whole part is just so murky and strange, and I can't really understand what's going on there, but I tell you that part because it just kind of highlights even more how close Jim believed he was to this family. So it makes it even more just unbelievable that he did what he did. Equipped with all of this information about the family and the dynamic with Jim, the FBI arrives in Cascade, Ohio on Saturday, August 10th. They have 2.3 million acres to search in this park that is called the River of No Return. Now, on the docuseries FBI True, Chuck Davis, our hostage rescue FBI agent from the beginning of this story, he explains that when this call came in that he had to get to Cascade, Idaho, they got a tip from a couple. This couple was riding horseback through these trails, and they come across a father and a daughter, or at least that's what they told them. Now, when this couple sees this father and daughter walking on these trails, they're a little confused, and they go up to them and they're like, hey, are you guys okay? Because these are some pretty heinous trails. Like, you're not supposed to be just like walking up here. This is why we take horses. And they thought that the girl looked a little out of it. She wasn't prepared to be hiking. She was just wearing jogging pants and a t-shirt, and she also had on these really big shoes. They said that she was carrying a gray cat and that the guy that she was with looked really well equipped to be out in the wilderness. So when they got home that night, they turned on their TV and they see the Amber Alert for Hannah. And so they call the police, and right away, the FBI is on the scene. Chuck Davis is on a plane and headed to Cascade, Idaho. Now, along with this tip, they did also receive a California checkpoint photo. They spot in this photo Jim DiMaggio's blue Nissan Versa, and you can clearly see Hannah in the front seat. So they know they were in California at that time on August 4th. And now, spotted near Cascade, Idaho, they find Jim's blue Nissan Versa just tucked away into this little spot covered in all these trees and brush, just like he knew that they were looking for him, and he tried to hide his car. But his car is hidden near the River of No Return. Inside of the car, they have all these receipts. They find a Walmart receipt that has all of the camping equipment that he bought, the handcuffs, a blue tent, everything, the same stuff that they saw boxes for up in his attic. He just left his receipt in his car. Now these cops, they're like, okay, this card's registered to Jim DiMaggio. We've got him on camera. We know this is the car he drives. He must be trying to live in the woods. So this is where Chuck Davis and his team come in. And first of all, you have to understand, like I said, the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness Park is a 2.36 million acre protected area in Idaho. This is one of the largest wilderness areas in the U.S. outside of Alaska. It was established in 1980. It has deep, rugged canyons, the Salmon River, and over 2,600 miles of trails. And this is a premier destination, like I said, for horseback riding, not for just walking around in some old Converse that don't fit you. Let me read off their site to you. Visitors should be prepared for 10,000-foot peaks, abundant wildlife, and a true backcountry experience. Hannah's rescue is one of the most interesting stories, and I have to tell you a little bit about it. Now, Hannah was very smart in the way she conducted herself throughout this entire experience. She says she knew there were points in time where she could have run. She could have said to those people on the horse, like, oh my God, help me. But she knew that Jim had a gun. And she knew that if she did try to run, there's nowhere she could go. What is she going to do? She barely knows how to get through this while he's walking with her. She also thought, you know, I could try to take his gun from him and shoot him, but I don't even know how to shoot a gun. So Hannah is handling this the exact way she should have handled it. And she actually helps the FBI in this situation. So the FBI arrived and they know they have all this acreage to cover. So they start taking a map out and they start sort of slicing up the area, they say, and they're building teams and they're assigning each team to certain areas. And now FBI agent Chuck Davis, he was assigned to Moorhead Lake with his team. They were given all of these assets from the Bureau and they had aviation assets. So they're flying planes around Moorhead Lake because they know that Jim purchased a blue tent and they're thinking maybe we can see from above. So they're flying around and boom, they spot them. They spot a blue tent and they see what they believe to be a blonde-haired girl with an adult male. And another thing that they find odd about this is they also see a gray cat. Hannah was carrying a gray cat when those horseback riders saw her. And Chuck Davis, FBI agent, says that when they received all of the details about this case, it was listed that there was a gray cat could possibly be with them. And he always just thought that was a little detail that he was like, what? They're going to carry a cat around? So when the helicopters above are reporting to him and his team, we see a girl, a young girl, and we see a guy, and we see a blue tent, and we see a gray cat. They're like, boom, we have got them. And now those five agents are going to become 11 agents. There's the team of five that includes FBI agent Chuck Davis. They bring in a canine operator, a canine, and then they bring in five snipers. They're all going to pile into helicopters, but this is the thing. They don't want to alert Jim. Helicopters are loud, you know? So they are dropped off about an hour and a half away from where Jim and Hannah were spotted. Now, they're going to have to hike, and this was not an easy hike. And Chuck Davis says, listen, if I weighed about 200 pounds, my equipment weighed 65. So it was 265 pounds of me hiking up a straight mountain for about 45 minutes to an hour. And he says that with their training as a rescue team in the FBI, that they actually take you out into woods like this, carrying all your equipment just so that you can, you know, get the gist, you can train and see what this is going to be like. And he said all of his training just kicked into gear and they are hiking up Moorhead Mountain. Now, Jim and Hannah are at Moorhead Lake. So the helicopters or the planes above, not the helicopters, the planes are watching DiMaggio and Hannah. They're keeping an eye on them. And now they see that Jim is, you know, leaving Hannah sometimes and he's not able to see her and he's going to collect firewood. And then they'll notice that they start to see a little smoke come up from the trees. So they know, okay, this is exactly where their camp is. And there is video footage of this. It is just chilling. The planes flying above, the pilots are on radio with the snipers on ground, and they're telling them, Hannah is as far away from Jim as we've seen her all day as we've been watching him. And Hannah is taking something in her hand, and she is waving it up at the plane, and they're trying to zoom in on her, and they notice, oh my God, she is asking us for help. He can't see her. It gives me chills talking about it right now. Like, Hannah was so smart to think that maybe that plane could see her. And she goes inside of the tent and she takes out this neon orange sleeping bag that they're using, and she's just swinging it. Jim can't see. Jim looks at her. She stops. She goes back again to swinging it. And the pilots are just like, she's trying to call us for help. The FBI, they start advancing onto the campsite, quiet as can be. Jim does not know they are there. And the FBI says that Jim opens fire on them, and then that is when the FBI returns fire. Now, this is from the viewpoint of an FBI agent who worked this case. This is an agent who rescued 16-year-old Hannah Anderson, who cried thinking about what she must have gone through and how she has no idea that her mother and her brother have been murdered. And so Chuck, he runs to Hannah, and he's like, okay, she's fine, but she is really scared. She seems a bit agitated, he said, and he doesn't really think that they shot Jim DiMaggio, because he looks down at this body that's on the ground. Now, Jim is laying on the ground on his back, and the FBI agents are like, but that doesn't look like him from the picture. And he asks Hannah, who is that? And she says, that's Jim. They say that Jim looked really gaunt, and he didn't look like the pictures that they were shown. So they start to calm Hannah down, and she's now realizing, okay, I'm safe. I'm with FBI agents. And they ask her, do you want anything from this campsite before we leave? And she says, and this part just like breaks my heart. She's like, I need my jeans. And they go into the tent, and they grab a pair of jeans, and they hold them up, and they say, are these your jeans? And she said, those are my mom's jeans. How is my mom? I want to see my mom. And Chuck Davis says that it was one of the hardest moments for him, because he knew he couldn't tell her yet. And he just tried to calm her down, saying, okay, we're going to get you home and you're safe now. On the Mortal Musings podcast, they like to take the cases seriously, but not themselves. Join hosts Neil and Megan as they dive deep into a new case each week. Megan researches and tells the cases, while Neil certainly has some interesting insights. They may be a couple, but it definitely seems to be a case of opposites attract. While Megan's telling of a case may reach a more intense or somber note, you can be sure that Neil will break the tension with some much-needed comic relief. So if you're interested in hearing cases about serial killers, lesser-known murders, animal attacks, or maybe some scandals in the death industry, give them a listen. Again, that's Mortal Musings Podcast. And remember, they take the cases seriously, but not themselves. Hannah Anderson was kidnapped on August 3rd, 2013, and she was rescued on August 10th, 2013. Now, I want to tell you what happened to Hannah. In her own words, Hannah is interviewed on the series, hashtag text me when you get home, and Hannah tells her own story about what happened in that week and what led up to this. So first of all, Hannah did not want to go to Jim's that day. She begged her mother. Her mother said, nope, you're going to Jim's going away party, his house going away party, and Hannah had to do it. So that morning, she had cheer camp, and her brother also had camp. So her mother dropped both kids off. But in the afternoon, Jim was to pick Hannah up at cheer camp, and Hannah did not want to go with Jim. She was already nervous about being in the car with him, because it took about an hour to get from cheer camp to Jim's house. And she's like, whatever, it's only going to be an hour. I will just suffer through it. And when I get to his house, I'll be with my family. So they arrive at his house, and she says that this is the point she knew something was off, because her mother's car wasn't there. And she asks him, like, where's my mother's car? Why isn't she here? And he said, oh, don't even worry about it. She might have just gone over to the neighbors. I bet that's all that happened. She decided to go hang out with the neighbors. And she's like, okay. They go inside of the house, and she sees her mother's belongings. just all over, on the table, on the couch, her purse. Like, wait a minute, why would my mother not bring her purse? And this is when Jim kind of surprises her and he throws a pair of handcuffs at her. And he says, put them on right now. I'm going to kill you if you don't put them on. She sits down on the couch, and on the table, the coffee table, there was a gun and a box of bullets. Can you even imagine how scared she is? She's only 16. He's telling her to put these handcuffs on. So she sits down. She's putting the handcuffs on. She's completely confused. And he's asking her for help. She's like, what do you want me to do? He's like, listen, I'm struggling. I'm going through a lot. I'm losing my house. I have a plan. I want to go live in Idaho, and I'm going to need your help because your mother can't help me carry everything I need, and Ethan is too young. And she's like, yeah, by the way, where is my mother and where is Ethan? He takes the gun and he puts one bullet into the gun and he sticks it in his mouth and he starts asking her if she knows what the game Russian roulette is. He's saying, listen, I'll make you a deal. I'm going to put one bullet in this gun. I'm going to stick it in my mouth. I'm going to shoot it. If that bullet kills me, you win. You're free. You're free to go. And if it doesn't, you got to come with me. You got to help me. And she's not saying, yeah, okay, let's play this game. She's sitting there going, no, will you stop? You're scaring me. I'm really scared and I'm feeling really sick from all of this. And he puts it in his mouth and he pulls the trigger. And when he finishes doing that, and she has to be beyond frightened at this point, he takes the gun and puts it up to her head. He holds a gun with a random bullet in it up to Hannah's head, and he goes, hi, it's your turn. Let's play. Hannah said that his eyes looked black. They looked soulless, and she just kept asking, where is my mom? Please tell me where my mother is. And he says, your mother is in the garage with your dog. She said at this point, she could hear Ethan upstairs, but it sounded like mumbling, like if somebody had tape over their mouth and they were yelling for help. So she starts screaming her brother's name, and Jim is telling her, stop it right now or I will kill you. He then leaves Hannah sitting there, handcuffed, and he goes upstairs. And he's only gone for a few minutes, but once he came back down, she could not hear her brother anymore. And this is when she tells Jim, listen, I'm nauseous. I'm going to throw up. I don't know what to do. You have to stop this. You know, he says, okay, I'll give you some pills. Just take these pills. She takes these pills and Hannah doesn't remember anything after that. She doesn't know how long she was passed out for. She doesn't know if he kept giving her more medication as she slept, but all she knows is she passed out cold and then woke up handcuffed inside of his car. She was completely out of it. She's looking around the car. She's not talking yet. She turns to look into the back seat and she notices that there are just tons of empty Red Bull cans just sitting on the back seat. So she's assuming, okay, he must have been driving for a long time. He drank all of these Red Bulls. I don't know how long I've been passed out. She sees a car approaching them at one point and Jim says to her, you say anything and I'm going to kill you. At this point, they're close to the wilderness park. And this lady is asking them. She gets out of the car. She says, hey, is there anything you need? Are you guys lost? Like, you know, they didn't look prepared to be out there again. And Jim said, no, we're fine. And the lady said, okay, cool, bye. She leaves. And Hannah says, Jim pitched a tent right next to the car, and the two of them slept in the tent together. But while they were sleeping, he kept her handcuffed. Like, she wasn't allowed to take those handcuffs off. And she said she wasn't even allowed to go pee in the woods. He came with her, and he watched her every single move. He was watching her. The next morning, they start hiking. And like I said earlier, she's wearing shoes that are way too big for her to fit into, because if you remember, he was picking her up from cheer camp. She finished cheerleading that day and she put on her flip-flops going to a party, she thought. And when he did put her in the car, she was passed out. He put his shoes on her. So she's walking around in these floppy sneakers, jogging pants. She's cold. And speaking of being cold, this whole time that they're camping out in these woods, Jim is telling her that they're going to have to snuggle every night to keep warm at night. And Hannah says this was terrifying She was absolutely terrified this entire time. And like I said earlier, she admits, yes, there were times I could run or escape, but I have no idea where I was. So they see these two horseback riders approaching them. These are the two that called in the tip when the FBI agents finally descended onto the scene. Now, Hannah's viewpoint of these two horseback riders is Jim had his gun in his back jeans the entire time, like right on his back. And right before this couple approaches them, he says to Hannah, you better shut up. You better not look at them. You better not look at them the wrong way. You better not say anything because I'll kill both of them and I'll kill you. And of course, she's frightened. I don't want these two people getting hurt. She says that she couldn't even look at them at all. And these people did report that to the police, that she wouldn't even look up at us. She was scared out of her mind that she would have mistakenly given them a signal and Jim would have killed them. And these two people said to Hannah, you know, we don't see people on foot on this trail. It's heinous. That's why we take horses. So after these two people leave, these two, Jim and Hannah, continue to hike and they get lost. I mean, they are completely lost. And even Jim is getting a little scared. And Hannah is like, what are we going to do? How do we get out of here? And Jim comes up with a plan. He says, maybe we can signal some rangers. And when they show up to help us, we'll kill them and we'll steal their horses. Of course, she does not want to do this. But the next day comes and Jim hands Hannah this book, like a survival hiking book. And he's like, think about some ways that we could signal some rangers. So she starts reading the book and she's reading all about SOS signals in the woods. But while she's reading it, this is when Jim is going back and forth to gather firewood. And this is when Hannah realizes the sleeping bag inside is bright orange and she sees a plane flying above and she makes that quick decision to grab that blanket and start swinging it. And whenever Jim would turn to look at her, she would stop. She's so badass at this point because she's doing everything she can in the most subtle ways without him noticing. So she's been swinging this sleeping bag. And in her mind, I mean, she has no idea. We all know that they saw her and that we got chills and we knew she was about to be rescued. I mean, they have a team of 11 guys coming up on her. She doesn't have any idea. So Hannah says that she starts to talk Jim into firing his gun. Now, she doesn't know the FBI is coming. She says, I thought maybe if he fired that gun, somebody would hear it somewhere and they would come and try to find us, figure out what's going on. So she said it took a long time. She's sitting there telling Jim, yeah, why don't you just shoot it? You should maybe just shoot it. He shoots it twice. And that is when the FBI snipers descended upon him. They thought he was shooting at him. So this is Hannah's side of the story. She's talking him into doing this, not knowing that there are 11 snipers or 5 snipers, but 11 FBI guys all around the woods surrounding her. So when he shot that gun, they descend upon him and then they fire shots at Jim and Jim goes down. Hannah describes it as she heard the shots, but she didn't really have any idea where it was coming from. It was all very confusing for her sitting in the middle of it. But she said that Jim sort of just fell backwards, almost like you fall when you're doing a trust fall with someone. He just fell and he hit the ground. And then FBI agents came out of the trees running all towards her and she was saved. Hannah's father is alerted that his daughter is safe, that FBI agents had taken down Jim DiMaggio, and Brett Anderson said, after killing my wife, my son, and my dog, and then kidnapping my daughter, I was just relieved that he was no longer with us. Now they get Hannah to the hospital, and while she's in the hospital, they tell her that her mother and her brother are dead. Hannah was just, she couldn't handle this. This was so overwhelming. And she couldn't be around men. She said even her father, she didn't want to be around him. She didn't trust men at this point. And her father came into her room and she told him to get out. She said that she felt so guilty about telling her father to leave. I mean, she made him leave the room. She said that she sat there and cried because it made her feel worse sending him out of the room. unimaginable what this teenage girl goes through, and she's not even feeling safe enough to be around her father right now. And not only that, but the community, the country, people are judging her. Like, what gives you the right? People are accusing her of having more to do with this than she's letting on. And there was this point where the police did discover that there were letters from Hannah in Jim DiMaggio's home. They were found in his home by investigators, and they also realized that Hannah and Jim exchanged over a dozen phone calls, they say, with each other before the murders occurred. But it is very important to state that Hannah herself went on the Today Show to talk about these things. And she said, listen, this man was driving me, picking me up from cheer camp. Our text, our calls back and forth, it was to let him know where to get me, where I was, are you on your way? That's all it was. She also doesn't have to tell us this, by the way, but tells the audience that she was going through a really rough time with her mother about a year before this, and she would often vent about it to Jim, and they would write each other letters. He would just give her advice, and they would just kind of communicate that way. She said that's all that was in those letters. Right after this entire horrific ordeal that Hannah has just gone through, she goes on the Today Show, and she does a very short interview. She was very nervous. It's an interview that will make you tear up. I'll have it linked in my show notes. And she talks about, it makes me cry. She talks about her brother, Ethan, how he had this amazingly big heart. And through tears, she tries to talk about her mother and how her mother instilled such a strong spirit in her. She says that her mother, Tina, was very strong-hearted and she was very tough and she knew how to get through things. It's also just so amazing that Hannah's friends and her community, they rallied around her and her father, Brett. They organized benefits, car washes to help the Andersons pay for the funeral cost. In this interview, Hannah says she wants to thank so many people, that she wanted to thank the horsemen, the riders that came upon her on the trail. She says, without them, I wouldn't be here right now. And I'd like to thank the Amber Alert and the FBI and my friends and my family and all of my supporters. And then she says, and I would like to thank the news, because the news got this story out there quick. And on that note, I want to tell you that John Walsh of America's Most Wanted, father of Adam Walsh, we've talked about the Adam Walsh story here on the podcast. He called Brett Anderson and he told him, listen, I'm going to give you some advice. You need to keep this story in the media, in the news for as long as you can. You got to go hard, because if another story comes up that the media thinks is going to be bigger than this one, your daughter's story is going to get crushed and no one will know about her. The best piece of advice that he can give someone is keep the story alive. And Hannah says on the Today Show, that is exactly what the news did, and she wanted to thank the news. Hannah's father, Brett, said that he often regretted that he wasn't here for his family when this happened, because, you know, he was away in Tennessee on a 3-month work trip. He says that if you really think about it, though, Jim would have taken Brett out first. Brett would have been the first one to go. And Brett thinks that is why Jim pushed him to take that job so far away from his family. Hannah's story reminds me a bit of the Elizabeth Thomas story that we talked about, abducted by my teacher. This was the same situation. A young girl, 15, 16, gets abducted by a grown-ass man. And the community around them is blaming the girl. People are actually blaming the child. Let's say that, because these girls are children. When a grown man takes them away from their family, that type of mindset has got to change real quick, because that shit is pissing me off. After Hannah was rescued, there were members of the public and the media that began questioning her role in this case. And that was because of the text messages, the communication between Hannah and Jim. They questioned her behavior during captivity and why some people interpreted her behavior as too calm, too cooperative. We explained that Hannah didn't have anywhere to go. She's also a child. She's not equipped with the knowledge on how to escape from a psychopath. The fact that Jim DiMaggio had this fixation on her should not be blamed on Hannah. Why are people speculating that she had more involvement in this? She's a child. Now, the law enforcement officials on this case, they will consistently state, and I will too, that Hannah was abducted against her will. She was threatened with death, and her actions during captivity were survival strategies. That was not her cooperating. That was her surviving. She was complying to avoid violence. She was trying to keep Jim calm. She might appear, like outwardly, like she's completely composed. She is under extreme fear in this situation. Victim blaming is bullshit in this case. And responsibility is shifted away from Jim when you start blaming the child that he got involved in all of this. You start blaming the child that he kidnapped. He killed her family. And people are still blaming her. Well, she must have had something to do with it. She was 16. Not only is she dealing with the loss of her mother with her brother, but now she is under public suspicion. She's got all this criticism on her. It's like people are just looking for a way to make sense of something that they don't understand. And they're questioning the victim. The case of Hannah Anderson is not just about the actual shocking, mind-blowing crime. It's about how quickly the truth can be overshadowed by suspicion. And Jim DiMaggio exploited her trust, and he carried out this very calculated act of violence. Yet it's Hannah Anderson who has been forced to endure not only fear and loss, but also public doubt. Justice is not only about holding the perpetrator accountable, it's also about refusing to let the victims be blamed for the harm that was done to them. Thank you so much for being here with me today. I appreciate the hell out of every single one of you. And until next Tuesday, stay safe and stay paranoid. Stay paranoid. Residue is created, hosted, written, researched, edited, and produced by me, Chrissy Champagne. See you soon.